This is the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan, and on this week's television review, we have everything from gay communities in the Middle East to android battles in the Wild West via a series of love stories in Chicago. And our guide through this geographical TV maze is the arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph, Alice Vincent. Alice, welcome back to the show.
Hello.
Now, let's begin with this new documentary on Netflix. It's called Oriented. This follows the lives of three gay Palestinian friends in Tel Aviv who are confronting their nationality and sexual identity. The film was made as a collaboration between the three men and the British filmmaker Jake Witzenfeld. Before we talk about the film, though, let's hear a clip from Witzenfeld about what he wanted to get out of the process.
I guess my concern or my fear, and this is maybe connected to the title of the piece, was that kind of accusation of Orientalism, of cultural colonialism, of kind of coming and telling the other's story and misappropriating it or reappropriating it for one's own ends. I was afraid of those accusations, especially, you know, when you're playing in a context as sensitive as the Israel-Palestine conflict. But ultimately, I overcame that concern or fear, and I hope the film shows my position is non-judgmental and is a position of an observer giving stage to complex identity to voice itself.
That was director Jake Witzenfeld there speaking to me on episode 29 of The Cinema Show. Alice, so talk to me about your thoughts on the film then. Walk us through what's playing out in front of us.
So it's, I mean, it's very much a fly on the wall situation. You're following three young gay friends. They're in their 20s. Some of them have known each other since they were teenagers. And they are men who identify as Arab. And they're living in Tel Aviv, as you said. And we watch them, you know, in very intimate scenes. We watch them in gay clubs. We see them around the dinner table with their family. We see them, you know, bickering over which YouTube song to put on while they're drinking before they go on a night out. And it's from this that we, you know, we see a picture building of what life is like for these men in, you know, as Witzenfeld was saying, they're like a really sensitive situation.
It's interesting that, I mean, so Israel is often portrayed as this sort of bastion of liberalism amongst other areas around it, surrounding it, that aren't like that at all. Mm. But really, it's you could even say it's more concentrated than that. It's really just Tel Aviv.
Right.
And Tel Aviv is, I mean, it's such a small city. What we're talking about here, this little beacon of being able to live your life as a gay person in this part of the world, it's really just such a small part of the world, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And this has actually been one of the criticisms that's been levelled at Oriented, is that it does paint a picture of three metropolitan men in Tel Aviv. It doesn't look at what happens in the more conservative north of Israel, for example, or beyond, you know, in the Middle East. But for that, I still think that it's a really important, you know, important film, because it doesn't, you know, a lot of people have said, right, this is the first example of this kind of people, gay Arab men in Israel not being shown as victims. And they're not. They're shown as, you know, interesting, complex human beings who are ultimately kind of living their lives freely.
And I get the feeling that some of these people are perhaps unwittingly weighed down a lot by the question of identity.
Mm.
And that's one of the questions that I think is running through. It's central to the film, really, how you identify with whatever identity is being thrown at you, whether you are Israeli, gay, Palestinian, all three.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do when all of those things are conflicting within yourself?
Yeah, and that is something that the film does really well to portray, actually. There's a scene where you know, one of the characters, he goes to an Arab music festival, which is still in Israel, but Palestinian music festival. And he said, oh, I feel so different. I feel, you know, like I belong. And then it's at that point that you realise how many different layers of othering they're feeling just to live through their daily lives. And then, you know, that's their identity on a cultural perspective, but then on a sexuality perspective, you've got these family conversations and there's talk of marriage, which will never happen in the sense that their parents are talking about.
We have to move on, but just finally on this one, for someone quite removed to that particular situation, I mean, obviously we're living here in London, very gay-friendly London. How easy was it for you to get inside the minds and lives of these characters? Did you find it very easy to maybe inhabit what it might be like from their perspective in the world?
I don't think I can ever possibly know as a straight white woman living in London, but I think what really worked is the sheer domesticity of some of the scenes, and you realise that at some levels people's lives are very similar indeed.
Well, that is Oriented. It's available now on Netflix, and you can hear my interview with the filmmakers on episode 29 of The Cinema Show. Head to monocle.com. Let's move along now, but we'll stick with Netflix on our next program, which is a new anthology series that the streaming service has put out called Easy. This 8-part comedy drama follows a different relationship story in each episode, all set in Chicago. Let's hear a clip.
According to this study, if I was doing less laundry and less dishes, we would be having more sex.
It's not our fault if you feel emasculated.
Exactly.
But you're saying that the women are less likely to want to fuck the guy if they're making more money. Bam!
No.
Okay.
I want your body.
You want to set up a Tinder account for what purpose? What, so we're like, okay, sexy couple is...
seeking another woman.
Dance with me. Dance with me.
People end up missing the one because they're texting.
Do you want to take your coat off and stay a while?
No,
or what?
I think I'm okay with my coat on.
Oh, no.
So, Alice, it feels as though we might be entering some sort of new fad, I suppose, for dramas. That being, for a little while, it seemed we had lots of political dramas. We go through these sort of crazes where we have police procedurals and so on. Now we seem to be entering some sort of age of the relationship drama. It seems to be well and truly back on the agenda. Of course, we just saw Divorce premiere on HBO as well. What sort of tone is this one striking?
Well, it's certainly a comedy. I mean, you know, you see some of that levity just there in that clip. But some of it is also really, really close to home. So a bit, as you say, like Divorce, and a lot like that's made by Sharon Horgan, a lot like her other, you know, her programs, which are just like nail-bitingly like familiar.
In an awkward way or
in a kind of, it's hilarious, but oh my goodness, it's so true. I guess kind of awkward. Easy is really nice because actually it's unusual to get from Netflix. It feels like they no longer have to lure people in with the addictive binge watching. Easy is the kind of thing you can spend an hour watching, put it down, come back in a couple of weeks, pick it back up again. It's quite rewarding in that way.
So interesting you pick up binge watching there, because that's really where Netflix seems to excel. They can put things out in whatever sort of format they want, and people will consume them as they see fit. The Guardian, for one, described this as maybe the most Netflixy show of all.
That's
what are your thoughts
interesting.
On that?
I don't know if I'd technically agree with that. I think it's certainly a show that the likes of Netflix or maybe Amazon or another online streaming provider might be able to take a punt with, because you couldn't really fit adverts into it. You couldn't sell it that easily. It doesn't have massive stars on it. It has stars that you'll recognise if you've watched other Netflix shows, you know. And maybe in that way it's really appropriate to Netflix. But I think it would work very nicely on Channel 4 or something. At heart, it's a kind of solid traditional anthology drama.
Does it strike its own chord, though? Because just on paper, it sort of seems to pick up similar sort of themes that you might see in the synopsis for other shows. Love is springing to mind. When you on first viewing, does it feel as though you're watching a brand new show, or are we kind of just maybe chatting to the cousin of a family that we know very, very well?
It feels contemporary in that, you know, it picks up with a lot of trends that are particularly millennial. So it picks up with that survey, which was released in the news maybe like a year ago, about how, you know, gender roles relate to the bedroom. And it picks up on dating apps. And you can tell that it's been turned around quite quickly by quite a young team. But, I mean, it wouldn't be, it's a complete anathema to say like a period costume drama that's obsessed with love. Maybe it's a closer cousin of Cold Feet or something like that.
So obviously another problem that we have with some of these anthology style shows is that you can identify a lot with one episode and then the next episode think, well, this is out of nowhere. I don't like this. I don't like these characters. Where are the ones I had before? Did you feel a little bit disjointed?
I actually treated each episode as a sort of a tiny mini film, and I quite liked it. And also, it has that vague Love Actually thing where everyone's life slightly overconnects. So you'll watch one episode between a kind of slightly frustrated married couple, and then the next one will be about their babysitter. You know, so they overlap slightly, and then you get this picture of the workings of a neighbourhood in Chicago as a result.
So it's, I suppose it's kind of the antidote to binge watching.
Yeah.
This one is the complete opposite.
The soothing balm to binge watching.
So all episodes of Easy are also available right now on Netflix. So Alice, we need to move on to the final television programme today for discussion, which, I mean, there's a lot of anticipation behind this. And I immediately think danger, danger, danger when that happens. But it's HBO's latest blockbuster series that's set to be the new Game of Thrones. We both just burst out laughing.
Like how many times have we heard that before?
Well, first, let's discuss that in a moment. We'll hear a clip first, though.
Do you know where you are?
I'm in a dream.
Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality?
No.
You and everyone you know were built to gratify the desires of the people who pay to visit your world. What if I told you that you can't hurt the newcomers?
Don't you touch her!
And that they can do anything they want to you.
A clip from Westworld there. Now, Alice, I immediately started thinking of, remember when Sex and the City went off the air?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was only, what, 3 seconds later that we had Cashmere Mafia and Lipstick Jungle, both taking to different television networks. I think one of them had Miranda Otto, the other one had Brooke Shields. And, I mean, both series were off the air in, what, 2 seasons max.
Right.
You cannot be the new something. You need to be the first new thing.
Yeah. Exactly. And this is a problem that HBO has had recently. You know, let's not forget Vinyl, that insanely expensive Martin Scorsese directed thing with Mick Jagger consulting that no one really gave a damn about. they have thrown a lot of money at things lately and they haven't always worked. Westworld, I'm happy to report, is actually really quite good. And I'm not going to say it's the new Game of Thrones because it's not a fantasy and there aren't dragons. But it is certainly a meaningful show that could well get people excited.
It's not a fantasy, but
it's a sci fantasy.
I mean, it's still taking place in this other world, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's based on the Michael Crichton film from the 70s, in which basically a mad, eccentric genius who in the TV show is played by Anthony Hopkins in a classically British, scary way, has created this fantasy cowboy land where very rich people sort of go and immerse themselves. And essentially, there's robots there who will do your bidding. It's like the next generation theme park.
Now, there are quite a few well-known names. You've just mentioned one, Anthony Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Evan Rachel Wood, Tandy Newton, James Marsden.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because Game of Thrones quite consciously did not put very well-known names in any of their roles.
Exactly. Game of Thrones for a long time was sort of the last chance saloon for a lot of veterans of British stage and little-known European actors who have since had like a flourish of fame. And this is interesting. They've got these heavyweights in, but I think what's interesting is those heavyweights have... They've had slight lulls in their career lately. I mean, what has Anthony Hopkins done in the last 5 years that you can necessarily say? And Tandy Newton has been always, you know, critically acclaimed, but what she's been doing lately. So it's really nice to see them back on screen, actually.
Now, I find it, it's notable, at least, that you mentioned Vinyl earlier. Now, Vinyl seemed to carry on after Boardwalk Empire had finished, and both of those were set in a very clear period of time. You could almost say that they were picking up a little bit on what Mad Men did as well, choosing an era and personifying that. So now we've got Game of Thrones coming to an end and then apparently Westworld picking up where that left off, both of them taking place in other worlds. Is there a bit of a problem where it's sort of been decided somewhere that there are certain types of television series that need to be in existence in order to be huge? They can be set in an era, they can be set in an other world, but that is the key. Whereas maybe in reality, there is no specific key.
I mean, that would be something for the TV commissioners to thrash out. I think there are clearly proven types of shows that people want to watch. I think the interesting thing with Westworld is that we haven't had a big, shiny sci-fi show in a long time. There have been little ones. There have been things like Utopia on Channel 4 and Humans, which is also on Channel 4. And they've ignited glimmers. Black Mirror is another one, but that's sort of quite close to home. So I think rather than being, you know, oh, let's make a really amazing fantasy Wild West thing, they're thinking, can we make sci-fi as sexy as Game of Thrones made fantasy? Which is maybe a more interesting concept because there's not a lot out there at the moment.
The expectations are fairly high, and I mean, not just because it's purporting to be the new Game of Thrones. I mean, they probably didn't say that about themselves,
no.
Let's be fair.
So it's pesky journalists who are saying that kind of thing.
But then, you know, some of the other shows that have been out in recent years that have made it exceptionally, turned into an exceptionally big deal, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, all of those, they were never really aiming for absolute greatness from the outset, were they? I mean, especially when we look at how Breaking Bad premiered, it was really just quite a small thing. No one expected it to be what it was. A lot of the actors in Mad Men didn't even want to take the role because they thought AMC was just completely untested.
Exactly. But that's what you've summed up right there. You just listed two AMC shows. And Breaking Bad and Mad Men were two shows that kind of would never have, they wanted to get on HBO and they were never taken for HBO. And as a result, they boosted their own network. Whereas this is a totally different beast. This is HBO being like, right, oh dear, Netflix and Amazon are kind of creeping up and we've spent all this money and nothing's happening. Let's make something big.
But we are, I mean, from the perspective of HBO then, we are peering into quite a dark, cavernous territory ahead, aren't we? By stepping out in the centre of the stage and saying, this is our new blockbuster series. This is, we are pegging the HBO flag upon the peak of this new Westworld series. And this is what we are. If you don't like it, what happens?
What happens? I really dread to think. But the good thing is that they don't seem to be sort of resorting to too much kind of lowest common denominator stuff to get people interested. You know, the thing that everyone talked about with Game of Thrones when it came out was the nudity and the dragons. And there's, I mean, it's still there, but it's kind of less of it in Westworld.
Oh, well, we end on an almost positive note. Westworld is on, well, not surprisingly, every Sunday evening on HBO in the US and is also available on Sky Atlantic here in the United Kingdom too. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. Thanks to my guest, Alice Vincent. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. We'll be talking about books. But for now, goodbye, and thanks for listening.